Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three top issues that we'll be diving into today on some questions that I think all international admissions offices should be asking themselves these days in these very challenging times in which we live. So we're going to start today with a look at some of the more important pieces of information that I've been seeing online related to coronavirus and the impact COVID-19 and this pandemic is having on our day to day. So what we really see with regard to COVID-19. Is an important part of our lives being changed forever, not just our work lives, but our home lives. And what I've seen over the last few weeks and months, as this has really built to a head, we're really at a time where there's a lot of uncertainty as to what's going on with regard to how our institutions will operate moving forward. There's also a lot of doubt as to what campus life will look like in the fall, if it returns at all. And that's something we'll talk more in the weeks to come as we get more clarity on what life will be like for us. We're starting to reach what they call the circuit breaker when we start easing back on the restrictions that have been in place in the U.S. For life here. I'm hearing from colleagues in China that outside of Beijing, everybody has a date certain that their students will be going back to school. Some are already back in some of the outlying provinces. So life is returning to somewhat normal for them, and it's going to be something we'll want to keep our eye on as we move forward through this process in the coming days, weeks, and months. Now, for those that are new to the Roundup, this is our attempt on Wednesdays to go a little bit more in depth into some of the issues that we've seen over the last 7 days that have received a lot of press that kind of generate some thoughts in our mind as to what might be really significant pieces of the puzzle for us as international educators and how we can influence our campus communities. What I do each week is I start with a newsletter that goes out on Monday mornings called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And in case you're wondering about SMIE, that's Social Media and International Education Consulting. That's the business. So it's all that social media and international ed news that's fit to share. So it's a newsletter, free to you, comes out Monday mornings, 9 a.m. Eastern. You can sign up for free on our website, smieconsulting.org/subscribe. On that service, what we do with the newsletter on Monday, we take three of the stories that we found that kind of generate these kind of questions that we feel are most important to what we do in international education, and we take them and do a little bit more in depth in this half hour here with you on Wednesday afternoons. So the in addition to the newsletter, the Midweek Roundup is available here live on Facebook and on replay on Facebook, on our Facebook page for SMIE Consulting, as well as on our YouTube channel. So I welcome you to check those out, past editions going back to July of 2018 when we started the Roundup. The newsletters are also archived on our website. But we also make this available in podcast form. So if you're looking for a new podcast to get into that's work-related, we certainly encourage you to download or subscribe on your favorite podcast providing platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Spotify, or Stitcher, whatever your pleasure may be, please encourage you to check those out. Now, with regard to our first question, the question of, is test optional really optional anymore? Now, what for those who have been watching the Roundup for a while or who have known me for some time, know that when it comes to test optional, I'm a firm believer in that for international students. It should be a reality that all of our institutions, even some of the most selective, are starting to see the light and move away from requiring international students to take SAT or ACT exams as part of their journey to reach you on your college campus. So what I've seen is with regard to test optional policies, there have been, and I've documented this before on the podcast and on the roundup, that there are over 1,000 U.S. institutions that are now test optional in one way, shape, or form for their international students. Excuse me, not for their international students, for domestic students. And FairTest.org has that list. And I also reported in recent weeks how there has been a list of international students of U.S. institutions that are now also test optional for U.S. institutions that are test optional for international students as well. And that list has grown as well from when I first saw it in I think it was July of 2016 at a international ACAC conference at Rutgers University. That list had about 225 institutions on it. There's well over 300 now. So that number's growing as well. So I'm encouraged by that. And some of the institutions in the past few weeks with regards to coronavirus have also gone test optional. And that's something that I think is very important to see. And you see that with regard to, and the biggest name out there is the whole UC system has now gone test optional. And that's something that's really been an interesting development to watch, because it was thought that earlier in the year they were going to go test optional, but they decided not to for the short term. But with the upset to the testing schedules for SAT in March and April and potentially beyond, there have many systems, including UC, CSU system is also looking at becoming test flexible as well. That what as in terms of not requiring it. So UC is now gone for the 2020-21 cycle. They will not require SATs for students who are looking to apply for entry fall 2021. Since it was already through in their application period had already closed for this fall, that it wasn't applicable then. But for the next application cycle, they will be to accommodate those students that were not able to test in this recent spring test dates. So we'll see where that goes, but certainly there's a lot more to be said when it comes to test optional. I've seen just in the past day or so, and we'll have more updates on this in the newsletter on Monday, on other schools that are going test optional. We've seen Brandeis, we've seen Pepperdine, we've seen other schools that were already test optional for international going test optional for all, and other schools that were test optional domestic adding in international to that mix. So there's been a real movement, and the folks at FairTest.org that I mentioned earlier, they have a list of 50 colleges that have gone test optional since January, and particularly in the last month or so, that number has expanded dramatically too. So how are colleges reacting to this, to what's happened with COVID-19 and the impact it's had not only on their current school year, having to go virtual and having to deal with some very sticky issues with regards to housing for students who weren't able to get home and such, and international students in particular. What are some of the other things that have been happening? In addition to test optional policies for new class of students coming in, there are institutions that are changing their, perhaps the less selective institutions are changing their deposit dates, changing their deposit amounts, shifts to June 1st as opposed to May 1st. Cutting their deposits to $200, as for example, said Albertus Magnus College, cut in half their deposit requirements. So there's certainly a lot of institutions are reacting to, particularly the incoming class, and how to make that happen. Visit days in April are not happening on campus, so a lot of schools have been going online. Old colleagues at Platform Q Education with the conduit platform they have for private events have been just going like gangbusters recently, with new clients coming on board to replace their existing on-campus events with virtual events. So that's been a huge increase in those kind of numbers. And we've talked about with University of California system, and also with the Inside Higher Ed article that kind of talked more in broader strokes on what's going on. So with regard to test optional, for my money, it's going to become the reality of how international admissions offices are increasingly going to operate, not just on the domestic side, but also on the international side, are going to realize that the international requiring international students to take these tests is no longer a necessity as you evaluate them. And part of the reason for that is we are in an increasingly global and competitive world for students that want to study outside their home country. It's no longer you're competing with your neighbor in town or your neighbor in state or across the country that has similar programs with you when you're looking at international students. You're competing against other countries' universities as destinations, potential destinations for international students that you're going after, the same ones they're going after. So what do you do? And part of my approach with the Roundup and all of what we do at SMIE Consulting is really geared towards getting institutions to see themselves not as one institution in context of just global competition from other U.S. schools for international students. That's a second or third layer that you need to be looking at, certainly. It's probably the one that's closest to you and one that you can most easily put your finger on. But what institutions need to be doing is taking things, all of what they do when it comes to international admissions, international recruitment, from a much more big picture view, a truly global view, to see who you're really competing against. And one of the things we do regularly, particularly in the newsletter, but also here on the Roundup, is we focus on looks at what different major competitors of the United States are doing when it comes to recruitment initiatives. And obviously right now, we're looking at how we respond to how institutions, how countries are responding to their international students in light of COVID-19. So the first one we'll take a look at is an ICEF country briefing on Canada. This report takes a look at some of what Canada's done recently. They first put in a travel exemption. There was a travel ban put in place on March 18th that prohibited any non-permanent residents or citizens from entering Canada. That was similar to what the U.S. had already done with China and Europe and then the U.K. and other nationalities as well. So what they had done, though, is they carved out an exemption for international students on March 26th. That allowed those international students that had study permits valid, that were valid before March 18th when the initial ban went in place, they allowed them to re-enter Canada. They were, however, put into a 14-day quarantine, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But it also, there were flexible requirements put in, or flexible relaxations of requirements that for international students who had to transition to online study as a result of COVID-19 could still count those courses towards post-study work permit applications, much like what we did in the U.S. In terms of maintaining status for international students, where typically they couldn't do more than one course a term online. They were now requiring them, institutions were requiring their students to do all online. There was the two major steps that USCIS, DHS took for current international students that we've covered before. They allowed them to take all their classes online and allowed them to return home if they could to take those classes and still not lose their F1 status when they were in the United States on campus. And it'll be interesting to see as things develop this fall, whether those extensions will be made for new students that are coming in or potentially wanting to come in. They wouldn't be in the country to become an F1 student, potentially, if campuses are not reopened or if they're not able to get visas in time to come. So that there may be a very large set of international students that might want to start in the fall that aren't able to get visas in time to get here. And if campuses are not even open for the fall term, and we'll talk more about that next week, there are more campuses that are developing plans in place to say, okay, we may be all online again in the fall. What does that look like? So we'll take a look at what that means in the coming weeks and months as those plans develop. But in Canada, they've certainly taken some steps with reducing the travel or carving out that travel exemption that we've talked about before. But they've also determined that international students whose employment has been interrupted by the crisis may be eligible for federal emergency relief funds. And that's certainly something it's not even in the conversation in the United States. This is the question I've not asked, if students that are on OPT now, if they're eligible for PPP in terms of the payment protection plan that was part of the relief packages that were introduced in Congress. So it's really interesting to see what's happening there. But I bring this up, this topic up, is asking the questions, what are other countries doing for their international students in this current pandemic? Then in Canada, obviously, has been, last few years, has been kind of a shining light in terms of their openness and willingness to welcome international students in unprecedented numbers for them. They've done a lot to make students see very clear pathways to residency and citizenship after studies. Study to work possibilities are very real and available for students looking at Canada. But they've also done things like we've just shared. You know, they've carved out into a travel ban. They've carved out exemptions for entering students with valid permits. And they, as I mentioned earlier, with regard to Canada, they do require them to go on to a 14-day, for those re-entering after the ban was put in place, they put them in a 14-day quarantine, the standard that we've heard all around the world for the last couple of months. You go in quarantine when you come into the country. So that's happening, and universities are actually helping to facilitate that. They are providing places on campus that are specialty residence halls or with their own bathrooms. They're providing at University of Victoria, they're providing 3 meals a day and giving them unfettered access to the internet to keep in touch with friends and family. They are, other campuses across the country are doing similar things to help accommodate the needs of these students. So it's good to see that Canada has really stepped up and is taking a very proactive approach to caring for their students. And universities here in the U.S. certainly have done everything that they can, outside of the few that we talked about a month ago, who were kicking their international students off campus when they were returning from spring break and saying, sorry, we're closing all our residence halls, find your own accommodations, and then forcing them to find exceptions, to apply for exceptions to those rules, potentially, to even stay in their residence hall. So there's been a lot that's happened on the U.S. side as well. That's been actually probably more positive and more proactive than some countries, other countries have taken. The U.K. is one that you've seen some similar stories to what we've had in the U.S., but you also are seeing their universities banding together and demanding compensation from the government, because a preemptive compensation from the government based on losses that they're already foreseeing for the coming fall term, where they obviously, like the U.S., take in the majority of their new international students each year. They have asked the U.K. government for up to $7 billion, that they're anticipating up to $7 billion of university incomes in the next academic year are put at risk by a potential impact of coronavirus, potentially £800 million loss this current year from other activities shelved as a result of the crisis. So there's a lot of numbers that have been thrown around in terms of what they're going to ask the government for. I've heard £2.2 billion. I've heard £4 billion. So calling for a doubling of funding for international student recruitment. So there's a lot going on there that I certainly think will be worth keeping an eye on. And in terms of what that looks like for the UK, they're certainly doing a lot of other things that in a more organized fashion than we could ever be capable of here in the United States, unfortunately. So there are other countries, and a couple of stories we put out in the roundup on the newsletter on Monday focused on some of what international students are, how they are feeling in Australia, and probably being a little bit too demanding, frankly, but not when you consider perhaps the approach that the Australian government has taken to international education over the last 30 plus years, where it's been very much a commodity to them, where it's an important part of their economic development plans for the country, not just their major universities, but across the country, are reliant on international student income to help maintain their universities and colleges. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with this moving forward in Australia, because there are some student groups that are saying, you've relied on us for our tuition revenue, and now you're not taking care of us. So you're kicking us out or not providing the accommodations we need. That other countries are potentially providing. So There's going to be a lot of moving parts in this equation in terms of which countries come out looking more favorably to prospective international students moving down the road, but certainly one to keep our eye on, and we'll be doing that here at SMIE Consulting. Now, the last story I want to cover with you today has to do with, we talked last week about what Chinese students are thinking. There were some surveys that were discussed about whether they're going to be changing their where they go, if they're going to look more to Chinese institutions instead of going abroad, if they're changing destination countries, what are the variables involved. And one thing that's quite clear is that students are pretty savvy these days, and they have colleagues and classmates that were maybe their seniors that are already gone on to study overseas, and they are hearing those stories about how their institutions that they're attending now abroad in the UK, US, Canada, Australia, how they're being treated there. And those stories get back to the current students. And this is all part of the nature of international student recruitment and recruitment in general, is that you're only as good as the students that you have on campus. And if you don't take care of them, they're going to tell two friends and so on, and you'll hear that will impact your future class in those markets that those students live. So there are two stories I'll bring to you today. First one is from, both of these are from Indian outlets. One of them is titled Admissions Offers in Hand But No Date. Indian Students Could Ditch Foreign Plans for Now. And the second one is from Telangana Today. And that's, for those who haven't been in India in a while, that is the newly carved out region around Hyderabad, one of the major sections or regions of India that's from which many international students, Indian students, come. But these two stories have a lot in common. They both are discussing in different ways what our Indian students are thinking now when it comes to U.S. study options. The first one from the Prince does take a little bit broader view that does reflect not only trends that we saw with China, that their Chinese students last week, that they're also considering more local options. This article too says that students, the surveys of consultants are saying that students who have offers from universities abroad haven't decided against going so far, but many are considering Indian options simultaneously. So that presents something similar to what we saw from China. But you're also seeing that here in the United States too, for domestic students, that there was an article just this morning that had a student who was accepted to private liberal arts colleges on both coasts. She's from Arizona, from Tempe, Arizona, and she's put her deposit down at ASU because it's closer to home. And the language she used in her response was, well, in light of what's happening with COVID-19 and the pandemic, it just felt it was the best option for me to stay closer to home. And that is a reality that's going to impact certainly many institutions that are reliant on out-of-state students, international students. If that mindset is very much part of a student's thinking, and certainly a student and their parents' thinking about studying on your college campus or studying outside their home region, that's something you need to factor in, and it needs to be part of your messaging now. If that's you, if you're that college that is heavily reliant on international students, heavily reliant on students from outside your immediate area, out-of-state students, you need to get on the front foot here and have those kind of discussions with those students to allay their fears, to talk about your community and the family atmosphere that exists in your residence halls, whatever the case may be, whatever you hang your head on there as it relates to the benefits of what you do in relation to how you take care of your international students. Because there's a lot of fear out there, and folks fear the unknown, and the pandemic is certainly very real, but the impact of it long-term is still unknown. But it's really something that needs to be a part of your communication strategy. And if you haven't changed what you're doing related to your messaging already, it needs to be done now and before it's too late for the fall. You're already going to be taking a hit. Right now, you should be in damage control mode, trying to minimize what that looks like for you in relation to the next class that you're looking at. So most What I do like about the second article from Telangana Today, when it talks specifically about the U.S. as a destination, it looks at what lies ahead. They talk about the visa issue, that right now there are no dates available for visa processing because the embassies and consulates are closed worldwide for students and any other immigrants that want to come for visa appointments. Right now, if you're going to online to try and get a visa appointment, the earliest available is February 2021 for a visa appointment. So that's not necessarily the reality, because when they reopen, hopefully in May, at some point embassies and consulates reopen, and then they're able to start getting through a backlog from the last couple of months, but also as visa season starts to hit in May, they have the bandwidth to address those issues. So probably not going to see crowded waiting rooms for visas, and there'll be social distancing enforced in those areas as well. There'll be masks that are required. A lot of these kind of social distancing things that we experience now, where 6 feet distance and all of these other things, wearing masks in public, that's been recommended, don't think those are going away anytime soon. Those will be our new normal, I think, for a good few months, if not the foreseeable future, when it comes to large public gatherings. So the crowded waiting rooms at U.S. consulates and embassies for visa appointments, those are going to be down. So frankly, the bandwidth isn't going to be there. Even if they have a staff, they're not going to be able to put through, in the same area at least, the same number of students that they have been previously. So that's going to be something they'll keep an eye out. So what is happening is, this article from Telangana Today does get into, is showing some of the options of what institutions are looking at. Starting, best case scenario, U.S. campuses open up as normal in the fall. They're able to have orientation in August, September, maybe pushing back their start dates for a week or so, and then all things go as normal. For those that can't come, not able to get the visa in time, or the campus has gone online for the fall, the likelihood is either you'll be deferred or be offered a chance to start. And for the nimble institutions that are able to configure courses for that first semester or first year online that will meet their core requirements for their programs for that first year, if they can do that online, that's an option, at least a potential option for students to, if they don't want to defer to spring, to take online classes in the fall and then come to campus when it's physically able to. So it'll be, those are some of the options. The article does go into a couple others that may be realities for international students this fall. And if you haven't had the conversations, I mentioned this last week, I'm sure you are, but if you haven't already had the conversations with your supervisors, with the larger campus community, about, hey, we might not be able to even get our international students here this fall. What are the options for them? If you're not planning, even though you may be able to reopen as a campus, and maybe you won't, but even if you could reopen as a campus this fall and operate as normal, in the new normal, for in terms of having people on campus, in classes, in residence halls, what are you going to be able to do for your international students who can't physically get there? Are you just going to simply defer as the best case scenario for your institution? Or are you going to give something to them that allows them to start, not lose any ground in terms of them being able to continue their educational progress towards graduation? Are you going to give them an option that allows them to start in the fall or online? Hopefully that's part of the equation that you're considering. And I really, if you have comments on that regard, please feel free to add them in on the comments section here on the Facebook page, or reach out to me separately. I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on what that looks like for your campus. So thanks very much for joining me today. Looking forward to some more lively discussions in the weeks to come as we pose these new questions each week as to kind of the food for thought that we think international education offices should be considering on campus around the U.S. So thanks very much for joining us, and we look forward to catching you next time. Cheers.